it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are here in conversation with some very special guests. We have Jamila James with the Museum of Contemporary Art, Connor Monahan with Yoko Ono Studio, and Kristen Reynolds with Choose Chicago. It's a pleasure to have you all with us. This exhibit is obviously a really big deal for the city and for the arts and culture scene here. So we appreciate you taking some time to talk about Yoko Ono, Music of the Mind. So to get started, I'll have each of you introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about what you do in your respective roles.
Kristen Reynolds, I'm president and CEO of Choose Chicago. That's the official tourism destination marketing organization for the city of Chicago. Our job is to make sure that everybody across the globe knows how fantastic Chicago is and that we welcome visitors from around the world to experience all that we have to offer.
Connor Monahan, I'm Yoko Ono's studio director. And that means that I work with Yoko Ono to develop and execute exhibitions, projects, and events, and also working very closely with museums, institutions, galleries to help bring those projects to life.
I'm Jamila James. I'm the Manilow Senior Curator at the Museum of Contemporary Art Chicago, and my role is to oversee the operations of the curatorial department, which is about 10 curators. I work closely with our chief curator and our director to determine the programming at the museum.
So we're, of course, here to discuss this new exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Art that explores decades of Yoko Ono's work. Before we get into the specifics, I want to start a bit about talking about Yoko's work for those who may not be familiar. So, Connor, I'll ask you how you would describe Yoko's work, and is there anything you think visitors should maybe know about her work before going to see this exhibit?
Well, interesting question to start with, because I would say that Yoko's maybe one of the most difficult artists to contain and define in terms of a category. I think generally the best way to approach thinking about Yoko's work is she is a conceptual artist, so that means that she's going to prioritize the idea over an object. And that means that she's then choosing many, many different mediums to work with that would potentially suit that idea, rather than relying on a medium that is preferred to express those ideas. So that's resulted in Yoko working most famously in the form of instruction, which is text-based works that invite the viewer or reader into the work. And sometimes that results in a form of mental participation in terms of thinking at what's prompted in that text, or sometimes that's then realized as a physical realization that engages audience participation. But Yoko's worked in film, performance, music, sound, theater, opera, painting, sculpture, photography. There's really no medium or method that Yoko has not worked in to express her ideas and work.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we think about art, it's easy to think, you know, paintings or sculptures, or depending on your knowledge of art. But, you know, like you said, Yoko's work kind of ranges from all these different mediums. I feel like there's every medium that maybe exists, she has some sort of experience with that you can find. So it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out in this exhibit.
And I just, you know, I touched on this, but to just highlight that ultimately all of it is about bringing forward some form of participation from the audience that is integral to every work, whether that be mental or physical participation.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about that too, because that's a really interesting and key element, of course, of her work. So that brings us to the exhibit, which is opening this weekend. As we approach the date, Jamila, I want to ask how you're feeling, you know, being able to see this exhibit open and kind of what the energy is at the MCA among all the people who are involved with bringing this to life.
Sure. Everyone at the museum, including myself, is very, very excited about having this exhibition be in Chicago. I had the opportunity to see the exhibition at both the Tate and at Gropius Bau in Berlin, and both times was truly an emotional experience. Yoko's an artist that I have had the utmost respect for and have been a fan of her music, and that's kind of the way that I came to her art. I think this is an exhibition that is really going to challenge people, but also excite people, bringing people towards participation, sound, music, media that's not always easily consumable in a museum setting. But Yoko's an artist that's really spanned all these media. And I think the public will really take a lot away from this exhibition. So we're excited, and we're also excited for the public to see the show.
Absolutely. And can you give us a bit of an overview? I know we've talked a little bit about what people can expect, but in, I guess, broad terms, what is this exhibit?
It's a survey of about 70 years of Yoko's work, starting from the 1950s when she was in New York City. It also spans different locations, her work in Tokyo and also London and New York. There's a variety of media. There's about 200 artworks, which spans ephemera, documentation of performance, film, music, sound, objects, participation objects as well. It's an exhibition that will also, at least in the MCA context, include performance live in the galleries, activations of Grapefruit, her 1964 textbook of instructions. So it really is a multifaceted exhibition that will give a bit of something for everybody. There's also a lot of text-based work in the exhibition. There's an installation that we're going to be including in this presentation called the Blue Room Event from 1966, which is a text-based installation.
So definitely a lot to explore. And like I said, I'm excited to dive a bit more into this and talk about what people can expect. And you mentioned the Tate Modern in London. This exhibit was organized by the Tate and a couple other museums in Germany, now obviously in Chicago. Talk about how that happened, how this exhibit came to Chicago, and why Chicago? Why the MCA?
It's routine for museums to collaborate with each other and to host each other's exhibitions. And the MCA has a long working relationship with the Tate. And it was a conversation between our respective directors and also me and Juliet Bingham, who's the curator of the exhibition, with Patrizia Dander, who's now at Gropius Bau. I went to see the show last spring, and part of my job as a senior curator is to help set the schedule at the museum. So it is a combination of original projects by our in-house curators and also hosting touring exhibitions. And knowing the massive influence of Yoko and our commitment to women artists at the museum and also to ensuring that our program reflects the most important voices of our time, this was a slam dunk in terms of exhibitions to bring to Chicago. Yoko's also had limited exposure in Chicago. There's Sky Landing down in Jackson Park, which is her only public work in the United States. But this was an opportunity for the museum to really support this important show, which is one of the larger presentations of her work.
Absolutely. And it's great to, you know, be in Chicago and be able to have that representation here, which kind of brings me to my next question. Is I was mentioning earlier that I've seen so many posters up promoting this exhibit, CTA stations downtown. Chicago, of course, has an incredibly rich and deep arts and culture history and community. Kristen, I want to ask you a bit about Chicago's arts and culture scene and how you anticipate art lovers and Yoko fans are going to receive this exhibit.
Yeah, well, the great thing about Chicago is that we are a city of deep culture, and we really appreciate art and history and diversity. And that's why we welcome more than 55 million visitors a year to our city. We have incredible access at both airports that just announced record-breaking passenger traffic, and we just had a record-breaking summer here in Chicago. So the great thing is that when we do have the opportunity to welcome incredible exhibits like this and notable artists, whether it's a major convention or meeting or marathon, whatever it is that we're hosting, we always showcase record-breaking attendance. We show up, our city shows up for these events. And so it's great. We just launched our new marketing campaign that Chicago has never done and never outdone. And this exhibit is a perfect example of that. We're never done bringing new, exciting opportunities and entertainment and art and culture to our community. And we won't be outdone in how we show up for those opportunities and exhibits. So I expect it to be a record-breaking attendance, and we're going to set the world on fire with this amazing exhibit. We're going to show up, and I'm excited to see it myself. I've learned so much already in this interview about Yoko that I really look forward to seeing the exhibit, and I think our residents and visitors are going to feel the same.
Absolutely. We always see Chicagoans show up for exhibits like this, whether it be an exhibit or an event, especially when there's some sort of cultural element to it. And of course, over the years, Yoko has had exhibits, and Connor, we were talking earlier, in other countries. But like you mentioned, Jamila, this is kind of new for our city. What's maybe unique about Music of the Mind here? You know, what maybe makes this exhibit stand out here in Chicago?
Sure. I think one key element of that is the MCA itself and its history with supporting performance and conceptualism pretty much from its founding. And Yoko is, of course, a very important artist in both of those histories. So to bring this show to Chicago really aligns with our mission as an institution. But also it allows us to highlight artists like her that have been foundational to these histories as well. So as I mentioned, one of the distinctions for this exhibition is to bring performance into the galleries. There's also plans for performance-based programs throughout the run of the show, but that was something that was really important for us to do, to collaborate with students and other people here in town to realize parts of Grapefruit, to also pay homage to the different performances that she's done historically. And in terms of Chicago, it has such a rich history of performance, music, theater, literature, all kinds of disciplines. And this is an exhibition that I think really reflects all of that.
Yeah, you mentioned some kind of collaboration. I think we see that with the MCA, that of course the MCA is hosting, but then we see collabs with Chicagoans. You know, you mentioned students. Can you talk more about how maybe that collaboration, we see that in this exhibit, and why it's important to bring some of those voices and include those voices?
The important thing to understand about Yoko's performance-based work is that anyone can really embody it and do it. There are invitations to the public and all the participatory work that's in the exhibition. It's in a way activating people to become performers, to complete the work in a way. So extending this invitation to the student population in town, we're working with UIC and I believe SAIC students as well, to bring them into the museum, to have them become familiar with this material and to do their own interpretations of these various works. Chicago has an incredible academic community and we really wanted to bring people to the MCA in different ways. And this is an exhibition that a key historical figure, someone that most people are aware of and are aware to varying degrees of her artistic practice. And this is a way for people to really connect with the work in a personal way.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we talk about that piece of interactive artwork being a huge element of Yoko's work. Connor, can you talk about maybe for people who this is a new concept, maybe this is something they have not come across before, how should they approach this? Or maybe people are a little nervous to be a part of this. What would you say to those people who audience participation and art is new for them?
I think an important way to approach that is for many museum goers, the experience might be that they feel presented by the artist, a work to admire. And in Yoko's case, the work is never about her. She's never saying, this is what I've created, please admire. It's always an invitation, as I said before, whether it be mentally or physically. And so the work can't exist without the audience. So I think you have to be able to come in and understand how integral you are to that. And that speaks to a larger message that Yoko's trying to communicate about that kind of agency for people to have in the world as well, and to feel like they have a voice and they can make change themselves. And so in this show, we really see these participatory works come alive in many different ways and, you know, reaching towards many different ideas. A work like My Mommy is Beautiful is inviting people to write messages about their mother. And I think on the surface of that, when you think about that invitation, you think, oh, that's going to be really sweet and nice to see tributes to mothers. When in fact, that's certainly present in the piece, but it also becomes kind of a journey through an emotional landscape that you're maybe not expecting, which is, you know, the heartbreak of a relationship with a mother that couldn't be mended or was lost, or a longing for a different kind of relationship, whatever it might be. And I've seen, every time I've gone through it, when it's, you know, open to the public, I've seen people crying. You know, I mean, it really touches people. And so it's kind of an unexpected work in that sense. And then there's other pieces like Add Color, Refugee Boat, which is bringing forward people's wishes and hopes about, you know, these crises that are happening in the world. And at the time when Yoko made it, it was in response to the refugee crisis that was happening in Europe in 2016. But that work has continued to really evolve in responding to every new crisis that we're encountering. And you see those messages on the wall. You see people expressing their thoughts, hopes, and dreams around that. And there's many other works that engage many different forms of participation. And some of them are just performance. We have something like Bagpiece. I think even in the context of performance, Yoko's probably best known work is something like Cutpiece. And try to imagine that work without the audience. You know, it doesn't exist. So I think that's a really helpful way to think about the rest of the show and the works, is that the works don't exist without the audience, and they are needed to complete the work.
Yeah, so it kind of sounds like the work becomes something much bigger than, you know, the physical maybe work that people are looking at, but the audience becomes part of that work. And I'm sure it's been really cool for you to see how this exhibit in different countries too, how maybe the participation has changed or evolved over different versions of this exhibit. Have you kind of seen that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you do get a flavor for the country, so to speak, when you're seeing these different realizations. And each presentation is new, and that's what I think is very exciting about all of these participatory works, is it reveals something new each time. And I think more what we see is not so much how Yoko's work has changed, but how there's been shifts in societal perceptions around the work and what a work can be in an institution, and also shifts within institutions in terms of what a work can be and how they can be presented to their audiences. So I think with that, we've been able to see a more engaged and broader reach for a lot of Yoko's works. And to be able to have an exhibition like this at the MCA, where we have so many different participatory works at different levels, and activating the museum that way, is really exciting and not something that was as easily done even 10, 20 years ago. So I think it's really brought Yoko's work to life in a new way.
Yeah, and you had mentioned earlier too, a lot of course, this exhibit spans decades of her work, but you mentioned that maybe some of that work is still relevant or even more relevant today.
I mean, if you think about this moment that the city is experiencing right now, the message of peace is power, to imagine peace, surrender to peace, are very important to the public to hear at moments like this. So I think the work has always been relevant, but I think in this particular moment where, as Connor says, there's crises erupting all over the place, just giving people the opportunity to come to the exhibition, to have these private or meditative moments within the show, like either doing My Mommy is Beautiful or Wish Trees, which is people can write wishes and attach them to a tree that'll be in the building. We at the MCA want to provide these opportunities for people to really think about what peace actually means. Peace, I think, is an abstraction to a lot of people, but it's something that we're all calling for in different contexts across the world and, of course, in our city, given recent events.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, you know, during this process of putting this exhibit together, no one knows what's going to be happening in the world, but as you are seeing what's happening in the city now in other countries, what has it been like for you to kind of see that a lot of what Yoko was advocating for and continues to have in her work is really almost directly relating to a lot of the things going on here? Is that something that you kind of noticed as you were putting the exhibit together and working on this?
This exhibition is incredibly timely, given everything that's happening in the world. And typically at museums, we're working on shows anywhere from 1 year to 10 years. And this exhibition coming together over the last nearly 2 years, we've seen every step of the way how the work really reflects the moment. And now that the show is opening this week, I think the show itself does a fantastic job of giving people the time and the space to reflect on it. But, you know, it's an incredible surprise that everything aligned at the right time. But, you know, Yoko's work is timeless.
I think that point about it being timeless is really important in the way that Yoko structures the work as well. If you look at an invitation like War is Over, If You Want It, while that was in response to the Vietnam War, it is anchored in any current event. And it brings you back to this, you know, the imperative of that, if you want it, and the audience, the individual feeling like they have the ability to make change. And even if that starts with making change within themselves or within their community. And, you know, for Yoko, the belief that, you know, communication creates connection, and through connection, we can create peace.
Yeah. Is that something you hope people take away? Are there other, you know, messages that you hope visitors maybe take from this exhibit?
I mean, absolutely, these notions around peace and also understanding that the personal is political and what people bring to the table when they're participating in the various works, it's a valid way of expression. Yoko's practice is very open in that way to give the viewer or the reader agency over how they realize or interact with the work. And I think the show will really reorient people to how they experience performance, how they experience written language, how they experience moving through an institutional space.
I think that's absolutely true. And the experience of being somebody who's maybe never made art or encountered much art in your life, being able to go into a museum and again, not just look at what's on the walls, but to perform, to participate, to leave a message, to add a drawing, to put yourself into the work is really empowering for people. And I think you can come away from that feeling like there's new possibilities and it can have a real cascading effect in your life. And, you know, we hope that that reaches into ideas around creating peace as well.
Obviously, we want people to come inside of the museum, but on the MCA Plaza right now is Peace's Power billboard. So people walking by it every day are also interacting with an artwork, and you know, we want them to come inside and experience the totality of the show. But that is what's really exciting about this, is that it really, the show really meets people where they are.
Yeah, there's so much art that I've thought about or still think about, you know, years after seeing it. So I can definitely see that happening here, especially for people who aren't used to maybe participating or being a part of the artwork. I think that can be really powerful.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but I do want to talk a little bit about some of the impacts this is going to have more broadly on the city. So, Kristen, I'll ask you maybe, in what ways does Choose Chicago anticipate this could really impact the city of Chicago financially, culturally?
Well, sure. Chicago is used to hosting iconic events and bringing people from all over the world to whatever, whether it's Lollapalooza or the marathon or wonderful exhibits that we're experiencing here. We also are getting ready to have the 100th anniversary of Route 66 in 2026, and it's also the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence signing. So it's going to be a big year for our city. But going back to what my colleagues were saying here, I think the timeliness of something, the messaging of this is really important for our city. You know, Chicago has continued to defy this negative narrative that has been reflected upon us event after event, week after week, with the response of positivity and love. I mean, the marathon that we just experienced could not have been more beautiful to see the people celebrate their perseverance and grit and hard work. We've got, you know, this event coming at a great time and also at a great time of the year where people are going to be looking for things to do to keep them active and indoors and engaged. But I love the interaction of it. We're getting ready to open the Obama Presidential Center in June, which is calling, you know, being called the home of hope. So all of these things culminating in our city is really reflective of who we are as a city and who we are as residents. The fact that we welcome these exhibits, that we still showcase them and highlight them, you know, in a time where a lot of other destinations aren't doing that. They're not celebrating, you know, art or culture or diversity. Chicago is doubling down on this. And we are saying we are the place where you can come and have these experiences that are positive and that reflect hope and peace and engagement and all of those things. So Choose Chicago is really excited about this exhibit. We look forward to making sure that everybody in the world knows that it's here in our city. It's really important for not only our residents, but our visitors to understand that Chicago, that's part of our brand. And this is the place that still embodies a lot of those American values of welcoming and, you know, where we support our immigrants and we, like you said, refugees. This is the city that still embodies those values. And this, having this exhibit here is just another example of that. So we're really proud of it.
In a lot of ways, we see Chicago trailblazing and leading in arts and culture, whether it's, art, Movies and TV is huge here as well. Do you think that maybe exhibits like these can move Chicago up on that list of and kind of making it a cultural hub that people want to come to and people want to, you know, go out of their way to travel to?
Of course. I mean, Chicago being the first city to host this exhibit in the United States is critically important because just in the same way that we've done with our culinary scene, you know, Chicago is now known to be the culinary mecca. We host the James Beard Awards every year. We are the set of the Bear, where the Bear is, you know, set. So, you know, it's the same with art. And the more we welcome iconic exhibits like this that the world will be watching, the more it does set the stage. And it raises the awareness of all of the other incredible museums and historical, you know, venues that are across all 77 of Chicago's neighborhoods. And we have, you know, wonderful museums that people are that know about that are in the museum campus. But really, this expands that and broadens that reach to let people know that there are museums truly in every corner of our city that celebrate all sorts of cultures and historical references. So it really does put the spotlight on us and raises the awareness, which is important.
I'll also say, as someone who has lived and worked in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, there is no place like Chicago, and we are really, really excited for people to see this exhibition because we're an amazing city. Yoko's an amazing artist. This is the time for this show.
As the total outsider, I just want to add that I, and as someone who spends most of their time traveling around the world to amazing institutions, that the MCA, the Art Institute are, you know, two of the most incredible museums I've ever seen. And so it's really exciting for us to have Yoko's work in this context and to be able to have it in Chicago. So it's an honor for Yoko and her work as well.
And certainly an honor for the MCA.
Yeah, I think we see, too, being able to have agencies like Choose Chicago be able to collaborate with MCA or kind of this crossover of institutions and agencies in Chicago. How can exhibits like this foster those relationships a bit more and be able to kind of strengthen, I guess, that cultural bond between institutions and agencies here in Chicago?
Yeah, I think Chicago is a really unified city. That's one of the greatest things about this city is that, you know, we come together and Choose Chicago is here to amplify that. So we definitely encourage other, you know, institutions or art institutes or venues to reach out to us because that's what we're here to do. Utilize all the resources in your community, you know, leverage all of our wonderful expertise and experience and education. So we do. We lean on our partners in the art world and the cultural world to tell us what's going on and to bring us incredible exhibits like this that help us put Chicago on the map. And then when it comes time to announce it, they lean on us to make sure that the world knows about it. So we work very well together and it's important that people know we're here for this city. And that's one of the greatest things about Chicagoans is we really do stand together.
Yeah, I think we see that everywhere. Chicago, I mean, the residents, the institutions and agencies, 100%. I think that's what I love about the city is people really go hard for Chicago, right? And for fellow Chicagoans as well. We have just a couple more minutes left. We've obviously covered a lot and there's a lot to look forward to with this exhibit. For people who are somehow not convinced to go see this exhibit opening this weekend, why should people see this exhibit?
We want people to have different experiences of an institution and of a museum like the MCA. I think sometimes the general public has difficulty seeing themselves within museums. And this is an exhibition that I think redefines what an exhibition can be. It invites the viewer in to the museum to participate in various artworks, to listen to Yoko, to see her, to hear her, to engage with her ideas in different ways. As we've talked about, this is a very timely exhibition. I think that it is one that the public will enjoy quite a lot. And as I mentioned earlier, it really does meet the viewer where they are. And it's always an opportunity to learn. It's always a nice opportunity to learn about an artist in a different way. Of course, Yoko's been a public figure for a very long time. And I think this will be a fantastic introduction to those who are not as aware of her artistic practice, but also an opportunity for people to see a lot of her work in one place. And we're showing it at the MCA.
There's multiple entry points for this exhibition for every viewer. If you've never heard of Yoko, you'll be able to come away with a wonderful chronological narrative understanding of her work and life in the last 70 years. If you know of Yoko through John Lennon and the Beatles, I think you could come away with a new understanding for how her work as an independent artist informed the work that her and John did together creatively. Projects like War Is Over, If You Wanted, The Bed-In for Peace, among other events. And I think if you're an Ono aficionado and are very familiar with her work, you can come away with a better understanding of how Yoko was working between multiple creative communities in New York, in Tokyo, in London, and really acting as a communicator and an organizer in those communities to bring and help circulate ideas of that time in a really compelling and exciting way.
I think something that comes up a lot when I'm covering art is accessibility, being able to physically access the work, but then being able to digest it. So, you know, you mentioning the multiple entry points for people's maybe varying degrees of knowledge about Yoko, I think that's really helpful. And lastly, I believe there are a couple other, there's some other museum programming along with this exhibit. Jamila, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. As I mentioned, there'll be performance within the galleries, but there's also going to be other performance-based programming. We will have a number of artists that are going to be realizing Yoko's scripts throughout the run of the exhibition. Nadia Tolenkonikova from the Russian activist group Pussy Riot will be performing her work Police State at the MCA, which is very exciting. We'll also have various talks with artists like Laurie Anderson, and there'll be other events that happen throughout the run of the exhibition that will keep bringing people back to the show.
Something I just want to add to that is that the MCA is, as Jamila said, is going to be activating performance in the galleries, and several of these performances are works that are instruction-based and have never been realized in a public setting before. So that's another exciting opportunity with Yoko's work in the show, is potentially seeing works that have never been realized before.
Yeah, there's so much to explore, and I'm looking forward to seeing it, and hopefully other people are going to be excited and walk away from listening to this knowing a little bit more about the exhibit and what to expect. Thank you all again so much for your time. I know it's a very busy week, so I truly appreciate it. And for our listeners, Yoko Ono Music of the Mind opens Saturday, October 18th at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Chicago. It's on display through February 22nd of 2026. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.